If you want jazz music, go to New Orleans. Bagels, New York. And for psychics, think California Psychics. You want the best, you go to the best. At California Psychics, home of free spirits and open minds, we know better than anyone what makes a good psychic. That's why we guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
I've got a good friend here today, and guess what? I get to choose who I have on my podcast. They're not all going to be Kelly Slaters and people you know, and quite frankly, there's so many good people that you've never heard of that are just exceptional, and I'm going to tell a story. So my first deployment to Afghanistan, because I was mainly Iraq deployments between 05 and 08, was to Jalalabad, and if you don't know where that is northeast Afghanistan, and basically where strike forces staged from JSOC to do operations in Nangarhar province, but as well Konar province, mm-hmm. which was, it's Mantown.
Yeah.
And Charlie, you probably know this. If you look at all the Medal of Honors received in Afghanistan, it was something like, of the 12, like 9 are from Konar.
Yeah, very region. Kinetic.
Yep. Very kinetic. And for those that have heard of Konar, I mean, the most beautiful mountains you've ever seen, but fighting in those mountains of that magnitude was not easy. The enemy had the advantage because they had prepared positions. But Sebastian Younger, who's a famous writer and documentary filmmaker, wrote a book called War, and then he and his cameraman actually did two films, Restrepo and Korangal, I believe were the two names. Amazing, amazing dude. But in 2010... end up in Jalalabad, and our SEAL element was always partnered with a 75th Ranger element, which 75th Ranger Regiment is good to go. But, you know, Rangers are big boys, but there was one guy who caught my eye, and it was, I'm like, God damn, 6'3". You were a bit more jacked
much
back then.
Much bigger back then.
Yeah, much bigger. Pouring out of his, either you're wearing like schmediums, but pouring out of his combat top. But what was funny is I quickly named him the Jolly Giant because he always had a smile on his face, was just nice and welcoming. But funny enough, the only other guy I called the Jolly Giant was Matt Mills. Do you remember Matt?
I'm not sure I do.
Matt was, you would recognize him.
Okay.
He was part of that strike force and was killed on extortion the next deployment.
Okay.
But on this deployment, Charlie was a 75th Ranger platoon element leader. Officer by way of West Point, just good to go in every way. Emotionally intelligent, probably more so than most of the people on that deployment. You don't get into West Point if you're dumb. That's for damn sure. And just was easy to work with. And Charlie, welcome.
Thanks, Mike. Pleasure good. To be here. I've got, I know we were talking before the show, but I have the just incredible memories of you and that group and that deployment. And, you know, frankly, I think about that stuff, you know, every day, almost dozens of times every day. Memories, the people is kind of what you miss. And, you know, as those years kind of get further and further away, you remember who stuck with you and who taught you about leadership and some of the hardships and some of the positives, and you reflect on that stuff. And I don't think that'll ever go away. So it's good to be back in this room with you. I know we stayed in touch for years.
But yes. We're you know, funny enough, like Charlie and I will go 2-3 years without talking, then it's just like we fall right back in, like we saw each other last week. That's just that common thread that people develop at war. Yeah. It's homecoming, it's belonging, it's vulnerability. You cried, you laughed. But Charlie, before we get, we're going to talk a lot about that deployment And then what you got going on now, because you've been grinding, and I know that's why we don't talk.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I got out around 2011.
Oh, no. Go start from the beginning.
I'm sorry, yeah. So, born and raised, I'm a St. Louis native. Great place to grow up. As Mike mentioned, I was big into football in high school. I had the pleasure of playing for Army for a couple years. That's West Point. Love my time at West Point. Very interesting, you know, 2009-11 happened my senior year in high school. So my class, I entered West Point in 02. So we were the first class to enter West Point in a time of war since Vietnam.
No kidding.
And actually the superintendent, I'll never forget it. You know, the first day you're still basically a senior in high school, your hair's long, you have no clue kind of what the next 4 years are going to look like. Yeah, you had a loose idea, but a lot of forming to be had. And I distinctly remember him saying that, a three-star general saying, hey, I never do this, but this is unique. You guys are the first class to enter this academy since in a time of war since Vietnam. So that always stuck with me. And I felt like my class in that kind of era in particular had a heightened sense of the reality of what was going to happen post-graduation. I felt like West Point did a really good job of changing summer training to make it more combat, kind of a combat feel to it, whether you were bringing in, you know, regular units from the 82nd, 101st, who had just gotten back from one of the two theaters, who could kind of impart some real-world wisdom. Where, not saying, you know, the peacetime West Point wasn't any good, but we certainly had that, we had that kind of sense of reality. And then West Point did a really good job of bringing back recent graduates who were platoon leaders, company commanders who had gone through serious deployments. And so it was good, you know, yes, you're a college kid, but it was also good to see individuals, graduates that you had known. Maybe they were, you know, a senior, you were a sophomore, you kind of knew them, saw them in the hallway, and now they were a platoon leader in the Ranger Regiment or company commander, et cetera. So we were very serious, certainly had our fun, but knew at the end of the day we were going to graduate, and then the real world potential of being a PL in combat was months away.
Only amplified by during your freshman year, the Iraq War.
Correct.
Also kicked
off.
Yeah,
that was my spring break of my freshman year was when we went into Iraq. And then obviously we had gone into Afghanistan before that. So in 2006, when I was graduating, you know, we had the surge in Iraq and then shortly followed by the surge in Afghanistan. So we caught a very kind of intense window there where we were direct, you know, as far as officers goes, as close to combat as we were going to get as a platoon leader, company commander in those two theaters. So it was if you wanted that kind of high energy, you know, crazy tempo, that was it. I think a lot, especially, you know, I'm still engaged with West Point, and I'll talk to a lot of cadets that are going in. There's some envy there in some ways, because I just got that timed so well. My class did. That kind of window from like 04 to 08 got both theaters heavily, where it was, you know, train, deploy, come home, lick your wounds, get back at it. You know, like 2010 when we were together. And you got so good, and this was a big reason, you know, I did my time. I wanted infantry. I kind of wanted that CONAR experience like you talked about. I wanted to be out in the mountains doing react to combat, you know, or react to contact, all that kind of core infantry stuff that you get hyped up on at West Point.
Yeah.
I wanted that. And a lot of my peers did, to be honest. So I graduated. I was a decent student, was lucky enough to get 82nd Airborne, which is kind of a quintessential Army division. Yeah. It was either that or the 101st or 10th Mountain. So, and those are all great options, but
yes.
Got lucky. Went to a great brigade. Obviously, you had to go through Ranger School, my infantry courses, finished those courses, linked up with 4th Brigade, 82nd, and they were deployed to Afghanistan. So I finished Ranger School, packed up my Ford Mustang. That was all I kind of owned. And then 2 weeks later, I'm on a flight to Bagram.
No kidding. So this was your first deployment when?
First deployment. This is like 07, 08.
No kidding.
Yeah. So they had been, my brigade had been deployed for a couple months, and that was when those deployments got extended. So that was almost an 18-monther for them.
No kidding.
Yeah, when it was all said and done. I was lucky. I just kind of got the year plus, and most had been there for a chunk before me. But yeah, we had they had to extend Afghanistan because that was the surge in Iraq. So they were kind of, you know, moving pieces on the board. But yeah, I was in 2nd Battalion, 508th Parachute Infantry Regiment. I was a platoon leader. So I flew to Bagram, took one of the ring routes to Ghazni, which is where my battalion was. And then the battalion had all these platoon outposts. So it was, you know, kind of like Vietnam light, where Army was trying to put all these different small platoon fire bases on the board. And so flew from Ghazni, and then my company was at Fob Wazikwa, co-located with the Polish. Spent some time there. And then when my platoon was back up refitting is when they, you know, we were in a small fire base down by the Pakistani border. They drove up. I said, "Hey, guys, I'm your new platoon leader. Nice to meet you." They're like, that's great, sir. We got to stack some MREs and check some mail, and in a couple hours you'll be given the route, you know, planning guidance back down to Firebase Tarawa. So was it a remote firebase on the Pakistani border? We had a kind of a tough job of interdicting Taliban infiltration up to the kind of more key population areas, which we did. But was there for a year. Was a fun deployment. Kinetic, exciting, built schools, did a lot of the big infantry stuff, from, you know, doing some gunfights to counter IED work to working with locals and tribal elders, and was just a great experience. I did get the bug though on that deployment for JSOC. One night on kind of the western side of our battle space, there was a huge gunfight. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I thought this was my battle space.
they didn't even give you the courtesy to let you know. Didn't even get the
courtesy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I get it. But we drove out to where it was, and sure enough, there was a looked like the remnants of some AC-130. And that's what happened. It was a Ranger platoon had gone out and dealt with some bad guys, and I was like, man, that's pretty cool. And had known a guy that was kind of a rising star in 375, actually a family friend, still close with him today. And I was like, hey, sir, you tell me what I got to do. And
I want in.
And so I wrote a really personal, mature letter at a young age. My wife actually framed that letter. And I'm like, hey, I want this really badly. I'll do whatever it takes. Let me know how I got to get here. Major Wilkins went to bat for me. Actually got an opportunity upon redeployment to try out.
Where did you try out?
It was at, I was fenced into 375, 3rd Ranger Battalion at Fort Benning, which is where we have what was called Ranger Assessment.
But you had to go from Bragg, where you were stationed.
Yeah. Got back to Bragg. We did our leave time. We had leave, and then shortly after leave, I was going to go down to Fort Benning. Luckily, I had a very supportive chain of command who thought highly and said, yes, you'd be a good candidate. Went down there August, and it didn't go as I had planned, actually. I did a 5-mile run. I was in incredible shape. I think I was running like 6-minute splits. I was probably 30 pounds bigger than I am now, and collapsed 30 yards from the finish line.
Heat exhaustion. Yeah.
I just wasn't used to it. And what impressed them, though, was I crawled to the finish line. And they're like, hey, woke up in a tub of ice and started vomiting. My body went from like 107 down to 99. Spent some time in the hospital. No lingering side effects, but I was like, hey, I wrote you a letter. I wanted this. I want this. So when can I come back? And they're like, you know what? You showed a lot of, you know, gumption crawling to the finish line. We can tell you want this. Why don't you come back in November, a little colder? And I did. And they winked. And so it worked. And I did really well and got selected. And immediately went into a platoon leader spot with ACO 375.
And 375 is Benning.
Is Fort Benning. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the best base.
It's gotten a lot better, pluses and minuses.
Yeah.
You know, the flagpole there is flagpoles there. So 75th, all the chain of command is there. Now, you didn't really see that because most of the times people were deployed. Mm-hmm. So they were gone, or it was a skeleton crew. And so when we were there, we had the run of the place. But, you know, like your experience with the SEALs, it was a team of high performers that really cared about each other. Very high standards. Certainly when I got there, I felt like I had some good combat experience, but it was a joke. Where the conventional army deployed, you know, kind of 8 to 12, maybe longer. Certainly the intensity wasn't as high. Not to say there wasn't intense moments, but it was kind of like a longer marathon versus a, you know, tackle drill combined with a sprint.
Yeah.
If that's a good analogy. But was really encouraged by my leadership. It's a different philosophy as a platoon leader in the big army where you're kind of running, you're running your battle drills, you're talking to your assets, you're kind of the quarterback of things on the ground. And then when you get to the Ranger Regiment, you know, it's that fighting NCO. Okay, sir, the enlisted men are in charge. They're going to lead the battle drills. They're going to lead actions on the objective. And you just can provide some situation reports and guidance and stuff like that.
AKA shut the fuck up and go stand over
shut
there
up.
And, we've and got, manage the assets.
These NCOs have 8 deployments. I know you think you're cool. You just had your one long one. But why don't you listen? And then when it's your turn, we'll hand you the keys kind of thing, which was great. So got there, and our first deployment was a very, very kinetic deployment to FOB Salerno and outside coast. We had, you know, the Haqqani network was there, the KG pass. And so this was kind of everything I had wanted. This was the infantryman's fight, you know, doing some kinetic strikes, hitting some training camps, thinking you got everybody, and that wasn't the case. You know, you show up, and then, you know, they're all fired up, ready to fight. And so we had probably 2 weeks that were like that, where it was old school, you know, old school gunfights up in the hills of Afghanistan. We had guys trying to hit our patrol base, you know, infiltrate patrol bases, probing us at night. I mean, it was like what I felt like Vietnam kind of would have been. Very close engagements. You could often hear them talking to you, and it was just some very intense moments that I recall vividly. But cut my teeth on that deployment. Felt like I gained a lot of the trust of
your boys,
of my boys. And then, you know, you get back and you do your AARs and how do we get better and you stay in shape. And I kind of likened it to being a part of a professional football team. You know, you or a sports team. You spend those training cycles with the team and getting to know each other and what plays you're going to run and how people operate under different conditions. And then you hit the season like a sport team would. But yeah, after that deployment, we met you guys. So we're all kind of caught up here. And then to fast forward, we had that incredible deployment up in JBAD, J Nice, as we called it. All the nice facilities. And
it was good living.
It was
good. And the chow hall was good.
Chow hall was great. Open 24/7. I distinctly remember coming back sweaty, exhausted, having a nice, you know, omelet and cereal and chocolate milk and hitting the gym and going to bed.
I think this was you guys. So for the viewers, I was, or listeners, on that deployment, I was the mobility commander. In fact, they called us the Afghanistan mobility element for JSOC. We had something called the Panders, which is like a higher speed striker with more capabilities. And I believe they are like Swedish vehicles. Awesome. But you guys, to include the other JSOC element, my element, don't want to use them because of the IED threat.
They
want to fly on the MH-47s, which who wouldn't want to fly with the TF-160? Yeah. Those guys are like, they're older. They're the best pilots in the world. And I totally get it. But you guys weren't hesitant to use this if that was the only asset available. And we went out, and this was my first operation in Afghanistan. And so, you know, my credibility's on the line, and for a lot of my guys, it was their first Afghanistan deployment. And we take you guys to the target, you hit the target, you get the objective. And then on the way home, one of my guys, because it's now like 4 a.m. in the morning, a good dude just nodded off for like 5 seconds and flips a Pander. Was that you guys?
I think
I'm like the second vehicle. He was like the fifth. And all I hear is, hey, a Pander just flipped. And without my helmet or night vision, I open the hatch and I'm running back that direction thinking, oh my God, I just killed a Ranger or two or three.
Right, right.
And it, when I came up on the scene, it didn't look good. And then all of a sudden the hatch door comes out and all you guys are like pouring out. And there's one Ranger who wasn't wearing his helmet that had, you know,
a little nicked up.
Laceration on the head and he was okay. Yeah. And then we had to recover. And then as we're heading back, Rudy, who was the strike force or the task force commander, I'm like, first operation, I just wrecked a Pander. I'm like, oh God, how's this going to go over? And he laughed and he actually said, hey, that was a really good recovery because we didn't have to get a wrecker out there. We self-recovered. And I was actually shocked because usually if I did something wrong, I'd get yelled at my old command. And I noticed a change in leadership. And as you're talking about earning the trust of your boys, that just takes time. Mm-hmm. The guys who try to rush that and try to play the tough guy or, hey, look at me, I've got this, usually end up flat on their ass.
Yeah, agree. It's okay to ask questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much agree.
And just give it time. And I I'm an impatient person too.
Yeah.
I want my credibility. Like, hey, I should be credible. You guys should. Yeah. Hey, I had combat deployments before I got here, and they're like, yeah, we don't care.
Yeah.
What I did notice was I started listening because the radio as an officer is your most powerful weapon. If you're on the trigger, usually it's a bad situation, and not that that didn't happen quite a bit, but I started listening to Ranger GFCs and the other JSOC element GFCs. I would just, you know, sitting in JBAD in the talk, just listening to how they made calls and writing things down.
Yeah.
And that was the best education because then I end up with the assault force because their radio guy didn't have the physical fortitude to make it in the mountains.
Yeah.
And that made it an exceptional deployment for me.
Yeah, we definitely on the officer side had to get that right in the Ranger Regiment. You know, because tactically you weren't really honestly doing a whole bunch. If you were doing something probably isn't going to plan. So reporting, being clear,
concise
on the radio was the best way that you could put your kind of talents to use to support the objective of the platoon, et cetera. And certainly you had, you know, Air Force assets and other people to help you with that. But that was something that we took pride in, I think. With summarizing after actions on the objective, summarizing what had happened, obviously collecting intel, summarizing intel, driving that part of the process forward was never ending, I felt like. But I remember that night well. A big part of coming from the conventional Army, I think, was, you know, when you get to like JSOC and those levels, getting to the objective was often so much easier. Because big Army, you know, you're driving 4 hours, half shafts are breaking, tires are popping, 4 hours turns into 8 hours, and we're like, all right, we're here, we're going after this guy. And then that, you know, those were like minutes comparatively.
That was the first op I went on. The second op was my first real, let's say, with the assault force. And so I've got the prick 17, 117.
Yeah.
Which I should have went to a AMP, and I'm forgetting the, you know, the smaller JTAC radio, which I did after this operation, but that was the night that Adam Brown was killed.
Yeah.
And that was one of the worst just infills I've ever done. We landed, we had a fast rope on top of a mountain, and a good number of your boys, I don't know if you were on that one. Were you on that one?
Yep.
You were on that one.
Yep.
I don't know if I told you, my ankle just rolled when I hit the ground off the fast rope. And so I had to crawl away because somebody's coming down the fast rope behind you and they will go right on top of you.
Yeah.
And so I called over to, I knew who the medic was. I'm like, hey dude, my ankle is like, dude, I don't know if it's broke or, and he's like, hey, it's sprained, but tightened the hell out of my boot, gave me some tramadol and said, it'll go numb after a while. And I wasn't going to be the one to get X-filled on my first like combat operation with this element.
Yeah.
And I was in pain for about the first 2 hours, but I think that was like a 5 hour infill.
It was all night.
And my legs were starting to shake.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember to the point where even when we got to like this path that led to the target, like guys were so wore out. They weren't like holding security, like somebody who was fresh and alert. And then we ended up on that target, and it's safe to say that if you remember this, no Americans had been in that valley ever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's 2010. How have Americans not been in this valley in Konar?
Yeah.
Because it was so deep in. Mm-hmm. It took Rob, if you remember Rob and Rat, it took them 2 weeks and even going up in assets to find a route into this target. Mm-hmm. And then all hell broke loose. And I mean, we were dropping ordnance from the air. It was a heavy firefight. Mm-hmm. Adams hit, Adam Brown, which they wrote the book Fearless. You guys are getting just hammered. And eventually you have to break away to go find a way to get out of there.
Yeah.
And then we've got to get Adam down those,
right,
those farming plateaus. Yeah. I my eyes were so wide when we made it out of there. I remember I looked at, God damn it, who was it? It wasn't Jonas. I looked at one of the assaulters and I'm like, hey, is every fucking night like that?
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I can, do that every night.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh God, no. He's like, that was one of the worst I've ever been on. And even they even said, they're like, that was one of the worst operations or toughest operations that our unit had run in Afghanistan. I'm like, no way. They're like, yeah, that was pretty bad. But what happened next was interesting is we brought, and this was Lou. And when Lou is determined, Lou Langless, who was killed on Extortion 17 and who we honored in 777, once Lou was going to do something, you didn't get in the way. And we were supposed to go to Bagram to drop Adam's body off, but he said, no, we're going back to J-Bad first. Mm-hmm. And you remember that vividly?
I do.
Put him at the fireplace, which was iconic for all of us.
Yeah.
Laid him down and everyone paid their respects. Yeah. You know, he was in the body bag, but that was just, I remember that vividly.
Mm-hmm. Vivid deployment. We were talking about the CV-22 crashes with our sister company. Because those were just getting introduced to, you know, a theater where they weren't designed for that kind of infill.
For mountains.
With dust and elevation. You had pilots that didn't necessarily were familiar with night vision. I remember that. We would do some daytime ops. I think I remember shortly after Adam died, we did something very creative where we kind of had some of those fighting positions up in Konar. And there was, for some reason, kind of a halt on ground operations, but what we did was, it might have been Rat, that we'd land and then put out some charts, some time charges to gauge reactions and pick up ICOM. I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll start talking about, you know, entrepreneurship and creative thinking and outside the box and build some scenarios that, you know, for future, you know, direct attacks, but that was, man, these guys are creative.
I think the TF-160, the guys were pissed after that because the RPG came right across the nose.
Yeah.
But we did see the reaction, and I think the infantry battalion took control of the assets and were dropping on the guys that came out.
Right.
Yeah. I do remember, we were following, who's the, Mark Twight, it was like his workouts. Mm-hmm. We were going crazy because Jim Jones.
Yeah.
You had.
We did those row sprint workouts together.
Turnip Seed, who was with us. It was a great dude.
Mark Twight.
That's Mark Twight. Right. But you did the, we had a competition and this thing was brutal. I mean, guys like puking. Do you remember this?
The 500 on, 500 off. Yeah.
So if you guys ever want to try this, you get four people, two teams of two, two rowers. And it is 500 meters as quickly as you can do, and you, I think we set, like, you had 15 seconds to swap with your partner, and then he does 500, and you do that for five rotations each. And guys were starting around the 120, high 120s, ending, you know, in the 140s, 150s, but guys were smoked.
Yeah.
Smoked. Like, it is like, and if you're in your 40s or 50s, get medical clearance before you do this, because it is like a heart attack waiting to happen.
Yeah.
And I think you guys crushed us.
We may have, I remember, was it the Jacob's Ladder? I remember we had some very creative fitness challenges, but very healthy. And we were talking, I felt like we meshed really well. We kind of bridged together and built a really cohesive outfit, largely because some of the, you know, Adam and some of the other stuff that happened. But that was a memorable time for me.
Yeah.
So,
except for when the team, is it Team Merrill guys came in?
Team Merrill
guys came in.
Which
I called the Gorilla Force, and they ate all our water.
I don't think, you know, didn't do much. But in concept, that was a good idea, especially if you want to work in places like Konar. I feel like you got to live there.
Basically, Team Merrill is like 100-plus Rangers go in and just like get in gunfights.
Start
with that many Rangers, like
yeah.
it's a bad day for the enemy. But I think they were posturing for something in Konar. It didn't necessarily didn't go.
Yeah.
But when you have 100 Rangers come in, all of a sudden the water's gone.
Yeah.
They're out of eggs. Yeah. And we're like, bro, you guys are good guys, but can you leave?
We were used to coming back from an operation and going to the chow hall, and it's just kind of us in the room, and then all of a sudden there's 70. I go, no.
Yeah.
This is not right.
And that concept did work massively. Yeah. They did great work, and I know that rotation stayed on. After how many more deployments after that, or was that your?
So I did one more down to Kandahar, Task Force South. I was I had done two as a Ranger PL. Well, I had my conventional PL time, two as a Ranger PL, and they got bumped up to a company executive officer. And I switched, went to DECO 375, but worked with Major Denny Young, who was kind of a Ranger legend, and then First Sergeant Colin Boy, who won Best Ranger. So I had two really good guys that I was reporting to. At that point as an XO, I was more responsible for watching ISR, beans and bullets, you know, taking care of the guys kind of thing, making sure logistically we had what we needed to be successful. So it was certainly a departure from the days of working with you and my Ranger platoon, et cetera. So did one more deployment, Kandahar. It's worth noting that right before we were about to redeploy was May of, 2011. Mm-hmm. So when we got bin Laden. We weren't involved directly. TF South wasn't, but obviously a lot of people know each other, and word traveled very quickly in those circles. I got woken up, like, sir, you're not going to believe this. We just killed bin Laden. I was like, no, we didn't. You know, crazy. We've been talking about this forever. Now, sure enough, and I ran to the jock, and there was a bunch of buzz, and, probably shouldn't have done this, but.
Do you feel like you're going through life clouded by doubt? Talk to California Psychics. Our trusted and accurate psychics are available 24/7, and we guarantee if it's not life-changing, it's free. Download the app or connect with us at californiapsychics.com. Right now, new customers get 80% off their first reading. Experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Went and called my dad. I'll never forget this. I'm like, Dad, the big reason why I'm here right now is the person we've been trying to get. And I was always worried that somebody was listening to these phone calls. Oh, yeah,
you had to be careful.
And I was like, Dad, trust me. Call my brothers. Wake everybody up.
Turn on the news.
Turn on the news. 20 minutes. Yeah. You probably hear something. And I'm like, I can't tell you right now, but if I'm calling you right now with this kind of urgency, you could probably put the pieces together. He's like, really? Okay. And then, I remember that well. I think it was a few weeks after that, redeployed, and the environment I was in was so intoxicating. I was like, man, not to say as an officer you can't have fun and do great stuff, but those days, both theaters were kind of winding down a little bit as far as, the good old days, so to speak. So I applied for business school and got in and was kind of done with the Army at that point. Certainly had some time to get back to Fort Benning and out process and all that stuff, but was very content with what I did. Did four tours all to Afghanistan. As we've talked about, learned a lot, still think about it. It's a big part of who I am.
Part of your DNA.
Part of my DNA. It's a big part of how I want to be as a husband, a father, you know, business owner. I certainly think it's calmed me down a lot as far as people get really worried about success or failure on the private side. And it's just, it's nothing compared to what we had gone through at that stage. But yeah, I went to business school and
back in St. Louis,
Washington University in St. Louis, good school. Was a good couple years, you know, was having fun and learning a little bit and kind of transitioning from a very intense environment to one that wasn't quite like that.
Decompressing.
I remember people coming 5 minutes late to class with a coffee. I'm like, oh my, how could you possibly live like this?
Shitbag.
What are you doing? And then I'll, you know, before you know it, you're like, you're a little more relaxed. But I have been more or less an entrepreneur ever since and have had plenty of good days and bad days there, but that's kind of been my road. I don't see it any other way, but kind of doing your own thing.
Entrepreneurship out of World War II was 49%, so basically one out of two veterans that came home from the Great War, not the Great War, but World War II, started businesses. Right now that hovers around 4%. And I am a believer where we came from, JSOC, is like a entrepreneurship incubator, mm-hmm. because you've got to be innovative. You've got to create solutions to asymmetric challenges that quite frankly, nobody else in the government can solve. What did you find enabled you from your time in JSOC to really step into entrepreneurship that armed you to be, and you've been successful mm-hmm. to be as successful as you've been.
So there's definitely a sting, for lack of a better word, about doing your own thing. A sting like as excitement, risk, upside. All the excitement that I felt, certainly with 375, was there. You know, you get up, you have your routine, you're calling the shots to some extent. There's some, you know, level of riskiness, depending on what that is. And I always felt that way when I was running my own thing. Like, you never get tired after lunch, right? And I kind of see that with some people that do more of a corporate, not that that's wrong, but or different paths, but I've always felt that way. It was the closest I could possibly get to getting that sort of sting feel.
So you have a higher risk tolerance let's be honest, just most average human beings.
Look, and my first business was a massive failure. I went out and raised money and had a distribution agreement for a concussion screening test. Okay, it tested your saccadic eye movement, how your eyes move. You do a baseline test before you get hurt. You get hurt, your baseline test, you know, gets slower. Mike's got a concussion. Okay, and this was around the time that concussions were mainstream and that concussion movie. I'm like, this is just a no-brainer. This is, how could this not work? And it didn't work because we just couldn't get, you know, key influencers to buy on. We get certain individuals and certain teams to buy it, but never the NFL or never the State Soccer Association of California. You get five little teams down here to do it. So it raised some money and, you know, had a nice size staff. And at some point I'm like, man, they're never going to buy this thing, are they? Rip the Band-Aid off. Okay, what's next? Like a deployment, lick your wounds, you figure out what did Charlie do to make mistakes and how could I have gotten better, and went back after it again. And my next venture was much more successful. I played in a golf tournament with a guy that makes overhead ceiling lifts. That it's basically a medical device that you install over a bed that helps lift somebody up off the bed and puts them into a chair. And he goes, Charlie, you know, the VA is doing a lot of these. They don't want nurses lifting somebody up out of bed, getting hurt. It's coming. This wave is coming. It's big in the EU right now. You should start a company going after institutional care and home care. You could do well. I go, okay, let's look into it. Looked into it. Maybe 3 days afterwards, I started Promise Mobility in St. Louis. had a good business, built it up in St. Louis, bought a business that was very similar to it in Buffalo, New York. Really liked that aging in place space, helping seniors live at home. It's still mm-hmm. a great trend. Mm-hmm. Was approached by a big company, national company that makes wheelchairs and distributes wheelchairs. And they're like, you know what? All of our clients need wheelchairs. You can provide the stuff that helps get the wheelchair in the home, up the stairs, out of bed. And so they bought my business in 2019. And so that was like a good four-year stretch where I grew a lot, learned a lot about cash management, because growth can come with certain pains. Sounds exciting. I think the best analogy is it's like eating too much at Thanksgiving. You know, it's really good. And all of a sudden you're like, man, this is tough to keep up with. But had a really good, attractive opportunity and took it. And it was the best thing for me and my employees, because this company was going to put in resources that I probably couldn't have done organically. So it's been the best. And then, you know, when you're selling your company, I was like, man, you look back and you're like, what could I have done better? How could I have taken improved earnings? Typically, when you sell kind of a mature cash flowing business, they're going to look at a multiple of earnings and you get to keep your assets, and they just kind of do that. You know, we'll pay you three to five times what your earnings are, and then whatever's in the bank and what your AR is, you get to keep. So you're like, how could I improve my cash flow? You know, improved earnings. And then that kind of leapfrogged me to my next idea, was based on a problem that I had with, you know, customer service reps or people answering my phones. So I had gone through a lot of CSRs. I was like, man, are they really working 40 hours a week, probably 20, you know, between when the phones are coming in and talking to customers. And so let's go start a company that does outsourced, you know, customer service support for home service guys. And because I'm like, man, there's got to be a lot of guys like me, a lot of HVAC guys driving up and down, answering their own phones, missing calls. Most companies now use a CRM. So they're taking the call in the car, writing something down on a piece of paper. I bet you that's not getting into the CRM. So Free to Grow was born, and that's what I'm doing now. And got a great partner, high school friend I grew up with. And we're essentially, you know, and still are supporting the home service guys, answering phones, scheduling, dispatching, CRM management, all that kind of stuff that was a big pain in the ass when I was running Promise, my own company. So, and obviously with the onslaught of AI and AI voice, now we're kind of evolving again. But back to that word I like, sting, and it's like you're taking an idea, acting on it, making mistakes, but it's yours. You know, the success, the failure, like a platoon leader, is kind of on you. Obviously, there's things that you can't control, but that's the attitude you got to have, is I'm going to do this. If I don't do it, it's something that I'm not doing. And so AI is here. We're pivoting really quickly. We're trying to be way out in front of this for the home service guys. I think AI is going to be answering phones for, you know, a lot of these guys, maybe not in 2024, but 2025, it's going to become very mainstream. People calling in to get their heating and cooling system fixed, very soon there's a good chance you're going to be talking to a AI bot, and probably not even know it.
You sent me an example, and if you're going into a call not expecting the other side to be AI, it's hard to catch that it was AI.
It's hard to catch.
It's impressive. It's impressive. They built it to where the AI voice is polite.
Yeah.
It's responsive. The lady on the other side of the call had no clue.
Yeah.
Now, as a business leader, I mean, you want to hire people, you want to have a team, but at this day and age in the economy, I mean, you're paying payroll tax, you're paying benefits, you're paying, like, the home services guys can't afford this.
Yeah. Yeah, there's three buckets of kind of home service companies. You get the owner-operator driving up and down the highway, answering their own phones. You get the kind of main street, maybe three to five vans, typically have one kind of CSR answering the phones. And then you get like market leaders who have kind of a built-in call center. So we're trying to build a plan for all three, right? And for the owner-operators, we want to make it like a self-service model where you can go to our website and basically choose your own adventure and pick your call scripting. The technology is going to be so good that at some point here soon, let's say there's Mike Sorelli's Lawn Care, right? we could do a recording of you, and that could become the AI bot. Okay. So thank you for calling Mike Cirelli's Lawn Care. This is Mike. This is AI's Mike, AI Mike, whatever you want to call it. How can I help you today? And so that incoming call, that client can have a conversation with Mike Cirelli's AI voice. Okay. It's quickly becoming that good. I think where AI is going to be in a couple years for this space, in a couple years, it's going to be kind of a commodity because there's going to be a lot of developers that are working towards something similar. I think the exciting thing is the ability for it to customize and learn for complicated companies where, let's say, you're a big electrical outfit operating in 6 states, okay, which those regional companies are there.
Yes.
How do you, call comes in, how does the AI language model dispatch schedule in Tennessee versus Alabama? Big storm hits, all the dispatchers are busy. How is it going to start routing for different emergencies? I think that's going to be the really exciting part.
But this AI is also making calendar arrangements, putting it into the CRM.
Right now.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And the biggest flaw in our CRM was not the technology, it was the people. Mm-hmm. And you go in and be like, hey, guys, where's this client's information? Or where's the updated information on the last contract we just served from? Oh, yeah, I forgot to upload it. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be resistance to this. Mm-hmm. From humans, mm-hmm. who are saying, "Hey, you're putting us out of work.
Yeah.
Are you prepared for that, or what sort of what do you tell society of like, hey, we understand that we don't want to put mm-hmm. anyone out of work. I know you don't. I know you've got a good heart, but mm-hmm. it's just at the speed of business and running a business is harder than war. Mm-hmm. Anyways, not life and death. I understand that, but it is from where we came from. Especially if we needed it, we got it." Mm-hmm. A small business is the most resource constrained environment mm-hmm. of it. Like, I'd love to have more people.
Yeah.
I can't afford it.
Yeah.
Can't afford to pay for their medical. Can't afford to pay for their benefits, their 401k. So I know you guys have run through this in your mm-hmm. head. How are you prepared for that one?
Well, it hasn't been gravy the last month or so. We went to our leadership team, had a business development leader and then an ops leader and said, we are going this direction. And we went our separate ways with those leaders.
Yeah, unfortunately. That happens.
Just didn't see eye to eye on this pivot. And we had several employees that saw this coming and left. Multiple. We went to all of our clients. We had dozens and said, look, here's a test account. Call in. We're going to get you really comfortable with this, like the recording you heard. And in April, we're going to start transitioning. You're still going to have people answering your phones, but we're going to start integrating this technology. And May 1st, we're going live, like it or not. And I'd say 2/3 have stayed with us. Mm. The third that didn't even call the test account. They weren't even
resistance to technology.
They didn't want to do it. Don't get it. But we're having a lot of calls now with a lot of different home service people, and the adoption, the understanding that it's coming is there. I think there's going to be a crawl, walk, run. I think people are going to try it out, demo it. Okay, wow, this is good. Let's do it. As far as there's going to be some job displacement, what we're doing is saying, look, our CSR team was typically focused more, 70% of all their activity was inbound calls. Now it's all on the outbound side. I think the human component is going to be shifted towards outbound, right? I don't think people are ready to have an AI bot unknown number, call them and say, Mike, Larry's coming out. I need your credit card. You're going to be like, no, not happening. But if it's a warm person introducing themselves with the company, Mike, we need an updated credit card. That's where I think the human side of this is going to be. It's just going to be, there's going to be some job displacement, but it's going to be job shifting. Mm-hmm. So we think this is great for our team. Inbound calls are tough, right? I used to answer my own phone. You do too. Like, you don't know when the call is coming in. Are they going to be happy, sad, annoyed? What are they going to want? You got to kind of go through these range of emotions. Now all that's going to be handled by an AI language model. Let's shift everything to a more predictable kind of outbound schedule. So there's going to be a lot of positives here, I think, with AI. But the speed, I mean, the ability to introduce emotion to calls is a real thing now. We have a big electrical client. So major storm comes through Austin, Texas. power's out. Client calls, I just got hit, you know, I don't have any power. First automated response, oh, okay, I'm very sorry to hear this is happening to you. Right. This is AI communicating with us. So you can create some sort of connections with this tool now. And this is just over the past few weeks we've started to see this. This was at the input, the client wanted this, and developers go to work, and before you know it, it's a real thing. We can take existing client databases. Let's within the client CRM, a legacy client calls in. The AI can detect this and take the client down a completely different talk track immediately, right? Where that's really hard for us to do that with a live person. They've got to open up the CRM, toggle around a little bit. Now it's just there. You know, thank you for calling. We saw you had done service 6 months ago. Quickly, what are we helping you with today? I mean, the improvements are so hard to ignore.
So do you, and we all know, and you nailed this demographic first for home service-based mm-hmm. companies. Is there any talks or vision of expanding to other industries?
We could. Yeah, we could. The reason we're doing home services is because we built free to grow marketing to that. So I feel like we've got a lot of cachet with influencers, partners, affinity groups, trade shows, and it's huge. I mean, I bet there's probably like 100 to 200 companies within home services right now that are doing this or thinking about it. I mean, very small is my point. Of the 2.5 million home service companies, it's like tiny, tiny, tiny right now. So this is a niche that we know. We know how to get in front of people the right way, how to market, how to spend money. At this point, it's just product development. Making our product very customizable. And then for the companies that want it customized, making it customizable. For Jimmy's Lawn Care that just wants an answering service and then maybe plug a call into a Google Calendar, we got a plan for that too. Because that's the biggest market, part of this market. But it's just a fascinating time right now. We're on the front edge of this big, big opportunity.
Well, I can tell you there's going to be quite a few home service-based company listeners right. on this that are probably going to be like, if that cuts cost, given this economy, quite frankly, it's...
You know, 6 months ago, I was kind of laughing at this idea. We had always thought about it. It's much more scalable. You know, free to grow, we'd bring on some clients and we got to hire somebody.
Yes.
Bring on some clients, you got to hire somebody. That person leaves, clients get pissed off, you got to backfill them, you got to train, bop, bop, bop. This is, especially with all inbound, you could get 100 calls at once. It's going to collect all those calls. It's going to be the same consistent product. It's going to learn it's a math problem at that point. And we're just shifting the human focus to more of the pre-programmed outbound, right? People still, when you have a home service person comes to your home, does a good job, what we're going to do is have a industry veteran CSR live human call and say, Mike, this is Gabrielle. How'd it go? I still think there's going to be a role for that, for the human side there. It's just in the speed. I mean, I scoffed this 6 months ago. 2 months ago, we heard some really good recordings, linked up, partnered with a really good developer. And each week, it's just these little incremental improvements. Our very first AI voice client was a West Point graduate, owns a small heating and cooling company in Alabama. And he's like, Dothan, Alabama, okay? He's like, I'm not sure how people are going to react here in Dothan, but it's been interesting. We used to introduce on the call, this is Nina, your AI assistant. How can I make your day better? People in that particular area said, I want to talk to a human. So what Kevin did was he called, hey, why don't we just take out the AI?
Yeah.
And all the escalations have gone almost away. So we're figuring these things now, but I am exceptionally excited about the opportunity. I think a lot, to your point of cost, I think a lot of home service guys and gals, owner operators, are looking at that cost line of hiring, training, fringe benefits, all that stuff. We're like, you know what? This is going to cost me a lot less. I may lose some clients. But I was with a guy recently, and he's like, you know, all those clients that the handful that may not like this, for the client that calls in at 2 a.m. that I'm not getting, He goes, I'll make up for it.
Talent is excruciating right now. Mm-hmm. And everyone knows I wrote the book, The Talent War, with my co-author, George Randall. COVID has changed the game. Mm-hmm. Great resignation, followed by the great regret. Concepts like quiet quitting, which is just basically employee disengagement,
right,
which is costly for any organization. We've done it to ourselves. And for a business leader who's got so much going on, to not have to train another person and have a system that will learn and become better, and like you said, answer a call, 100 calls at the same time or at 2 a.m., you just can't pass that up. And what's the greater evil here? The business goes out of business, or you let a few people off and they have to, as you say, job shift.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm heartless.
Yeah.
It's not. I feel for anyone, but we as a society and humans need to start evaluating where those future career paths are. And there was a great quote. I know you heard this one on Joe Rogan. And again, I'm forgetting the name of the guest, but he said, humans who use AI, or no, AI won't replace humans, but humans who use AI will replace humans who don't. And it's just, again, it's like an industrial revolution. People have to reassess, is going to college a smart route? Or going into the trades. And I recently connected you with a great dude, Ken Rusk.
Yeah, spoke to Ken. Great
blue
guy.
Blue-collar millionaire.
Yeah.
And that guy has crushed it.
Yeah.
Purely the trades. And I'm telling this to my son. I'm like, if you want to go to college, great. Let's figure out what you want to major in that actually provides value. Because college was, I took business in college under my undergrad, was completely worthless. And my wife and I were having this conversation yesterday going into college. We're like, do you know how many classes I took? Which were like, I had to take meteorology. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't provide all that much value in my life. She's like, I took geology. I don't give a shit about rocks. Like, I was a communications major. I would have rather taken another communications class, something that was very targeted that would have enhanced my skills. College is just, it's almost a racket now in some regards. It can be done a lot quicker, but the trades, that AI is never automating that.
No, agree. Yeah.
I'm like, go learn a trade.
Yeah.
I will actually help fund your business. Mm-hmm. I'll teach you the business side, and you will never lose your job unless you're just completely lazy and don't do good work. But
the opportunities in the trades, and I college is crazy to me. Okay. I get it. If you want to be focused and go to West Point, you want to be an officer,
yes.
or something very focused, I get that completely.
Very different.
But for generally speaking, I would much rather somebody maybe go enlist for a couple of years, go start a lawn care company. Even if you're not going to be in lawn care forever, learn about how cash transfers, how to sell, how to manage people, get your hands up, maybe start a smaller trade business. That to me is so much more worth it. I mean, I look back, I have regrets about going to business school because I could have been like, man, I could have started something 2 years earlier and maybe learned more than I am now. I'm certainly not the smartest guy in that stuff, but I learn a lot through mistakes and trying stuff and getting better.
Stepping into the arena.
And I really think that most people should get their hands on something like that, a trade or start a small company, learn about how to manage cash, how to sell stuff, how to sell yourself, how to deliver on a product. Deal with customers, all those different facets that you have to.
Even my MBA didn't provide that.
Yeah.
And God bless UT. That was more valuable for me, as we said, decompressed to start making those behavioral shifts that I needed to make stepping out of our environment into the private sector. But I didn't learn about taxation. Mm. I didn't learn about business structure. Yeah. Yeah. There's so many things, how to file. To create a company. None of those things I learned that I had to learn on my own. But swimming, that's another one. I took 6 credits of swimming at Texas A&M. I'm like, I come from the recon community. They're like, well, you have to select something. And I'm like,
swimming.
What? I'm paying for 3 credit hours for swimming? Yeah. I was a combat diver, like in the Marine Corps. Like that's the one thing I didn't need help with. Waste. But, the trades are valuable, and those who go into the trades and not only become subject matter experts in that, but know how to run a good business, that's printing cash.
Yeah, AI is only going to help the trades owner-operators be better owner-operators. We started Free to Grow because I'm like, look, you didn't start your gutter replacement business to answer phones, I'm assuming. You wanted to get up there, install stuff, get paid, okay? But now you're getting like dragged down in the weeds, so to speak, because calls are coming in. I'm like, let us handle that. So if there's a better product, which this is going to be, to let them go give better training to their technicians, go drive business, that's what they want to do. So I think to the benefit of something like AI, if it can benefit their business, that's what is going to work. And that's what it's going to be.
Well, now, if you can automate my invoicing and everything else, I'd appreciate it. Even like video editing, if you can automate that. I'm messing with you, Will. Yeah. I'm messing with you.
Product development's going to be interesting. And within, we'll probably see more outbound stuff like Angie leads, quickly responding to those leads. I'm assuming there's going to be updates constantly.
Well, AI's got to be catching up on the video editing side. Yeah, no, that's true. And I can't have bullshit conversations in the office with AI. We can't talk about Shogun. The last episode just came out, right? Yeah, but I think there was only 10 episodes in this. I think it's one season. Shogun's not going to be two seasons. It's one. Have you been watching Shogun?
No.
Who wrote Shogun? It was James Cavill. Yeah. Beautiful. It was 18th century Japan. 17th. Yeah, I think there's a reason we're in content. We love movies, man.
Yeah.
We talk about it all the time. But he gets to take his girlfriend. Jordan won't go to the movies with me. She refuses. Yeah, bitches.
But David Petraeus, that new book he wrote, he talks about the future of combat, AI conflict, AI versus AI. I read an article recently about dogfighting.
With drones?
With drones.
Like a swarm tactic?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to change everything. So the drones, there's a lot of our brethren that are now working for drone companies. I mean, I couldn't think of a worse nightmare with 1,000 drones coming over the horizon with little grenades, and anti-drone, I think the true industry to jump into right now is counter-drone warfare, which I don't think any drone companies are dual purpose yet to defeat their own systems. Yeah. But warfare is completely, completely changing. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting. Again, can you take the pilot out of the cockpit? Mm-hmm. Of course, fighter pilots are going to be like, no, you can't. Mm-hmm. I empathize with them because you're a guy who's about to lose your job. I think the way that AI is going, you can absolutely take a pilot out of the cockpit. Which is just job shifting. Mm-hmm. But can you automate special operations? Not until you have autonomous drones that can operate on the ground. But we use AI for everything now within Talent War Group, Everyday Warrior here, the podcast. Mm-hmm. We're using it all the time, even copyright on the website and everything. Because it's going to write better than we were if we give it the right prompts. But that is an art too now. And I know you've got developers is learning how to prompt in order to get the best outcome from AI.
Yeah, wild times.
Well, dude, people can find you. Thank God you probably don't have a personal website like I do. Fuck my life.
I don't. We got a good company website, freetogrow.com.
Free to grow, free, all one word?
It's freetogrow.com.
Okay, and we will drop that in the copyright for this. But, Charlie, congrats, man! You play to the narrative that veterans are not broke, that you are doing good things despite the things you went through, and testament. And guys, go follow. You're on LinkedIn. Go follow Charlie on LinkedIn again. When I talk about warriors, and this is not the first time they've heard this, I always talk about what they get wrong is that the guys in JSOC I served with, who are arguably some of the best warriors in the world, that's objective, not subjective, are the kindest, most empathetic, respectful people you'll ever meet, and they don't beat their chest, and you personify
nicest
that.
People. I agree with you.
To the letter. Well, brother, thank you, man.
Thanks, Mike.
Excited to watch this this take place, and I may end up on a phone call where I don't know the other side is AI.
You may not. Nina.
Good, yeah. Nina. Yeah. Okay, perfect. All right, guys, thanks for joining. Again, go to whatever podcast platform that you utilize. Leave a review for us. We actually do read them. And until next time, out here.
Do you feel like you're going through life clouded by doubt? Talk to California Psychics. our trusted and accurate psychics are available 24/7. And we guarantee, if it's not life-changing, it's free. Download the app or connect with us at californiapsychics.com. Right now, new customers get 80% off their first reading. Experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.